What's up, Knicks fans? Welcome to playoff edition of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. You are going to get a whole lot of optimism tonight because we are coming off of a Knicks win. You see Rafa over there, Knicks in six. Love to see that. Knicks, started their playoff series last night against Cleveland. Guys, how are we feeling right now?
Oh man, I've still not come down yet, Omar. Like had a real late one, as my texts might have shown. Yeah, didn't get to bed till about 3:30 in the morning.
Still hangover or no?
No,
still drunk,
no,
maybe no.
No, not too bad. Get right back on it for Tuesday night drinking. So, looking forward to that. But yeah, no. What a fantastic win. I was so ecstatic. I have calmed down a little bit from getting a little bit angry about some of the fan reactions, but I'm sure we'll get on to that at time.
Yeah. Rafa, man, how are you feeling?
I am so happy I can write this down. This is me.
Ooh.
This is me. Yeah, tips.
Yeah, we'll be
covered. Damn it, I'm happy.
You know, for the audio only listeners, Rafa had three things up there. First was Knicks in six. Second is Brunson is him. And third is in Tibbs we trust. So let's get into it, guys.
So you audio listeners, you're missing out because we do stuff on camera.
Video. There
you
go. Right, right.
You're missing out.
So let's get right into it, guys. So Knicks go into Cleveland, steal game one, 101-97. In just a muck fest, a 90s style game where the final was 101-97. Both teams shot atrociously from three, but the Knicks made the shots and made the plays they needed to make when they needed them and come out victorious. 101-97, steal game one in Cleveland. Game two, as Alex mentioned, is going to be on Tuesday. So starting right off, guys, after this win, what was your overall reaction to the game?
I was really surprised at how kind of controlled the game was. I thought the game was going well. I think the whole series is going to be like a back and forth. I think I said last week that I don't expect any blowouts in this series. I think every game's going to just be a bit of a dogfight, or whatever the right term is, and it's just going to be back and forward. It felt like, you know, the Knicks had a fail for a lot of the game, were just kind of keeping them at arm's length. And then there was that point late on where it came back and the Cavs took the lead. And I can't say enough about the team, about how earlier in the season we had quite a few of those games where we let leads slip and you know, the game just kind of petered out and we lost the game. And just the fact of coming back from that, you know, and for a young team just to kind of drag ourselves through that and get the win, it was just phenomenal. So impressed.
I was so surprised. There were two teams out there, and we looked like we belonged there in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Calm, even with the rough plays we had, it wasn't a perfect game, by far from it. We had rough patches out there, but we acted, we looked like we belonged there. We're like, we've already been there, winning. Well, does that's a pressure game. Game one away from home, I think that's a pressure game for both teams right there. But that's the pressure of the Knicks. You need to take one away from home, and he did it. And there was a bit in that fourth quarter. We looked a little bit, this might go south quickly, but we stayed composed. We used our bench, which was a big part for me. And we stayed collected. We looked like we belonged. We discussed this during the game, that the Cavs look way more nervous than the Knicks. And they're two young teams. So they could look, both of them look nervous, but the Cavs look way more pressured than the Knicks. That's why we looked like we belong there.
You know, most of my takeaways are about the Cavs for this game, to be honest, guys. The Knicks won a game in the manner of which they've won many games throughout the regular season, which is a lot of timely rebounding, a lot of timely defending, and the shots were ugly, but when we needed them the most, they went in. You know, you think to that Josh Hart three, you know, you think to a couple of timely shots from Julius in the first half, and of course Brunson just being magnificent later on. That's kind of the story of this Knicks season. But for the Cavs, you've said it, Rafa, they look tight. They look nervous. You know, Mitchell, of course, has playoff experience, and he, you can tell he's going to have to carry them on his back. And we talked a lot, both on the pod and offline, about the bench and how the Knicks have a bench advantage. Boy, was it evident yesterday. And, you know, Josh Hart was magnificent. We'll get to, you know, the player kind of analysis in a second here. But, yeah, that to me was the big thing. And, you know, Bickerstaff, he kind of looked a little bit over his skis against Thibodeau. And I think Cleveland, yeah, they have reason to be concerned here, because New York withstood an outpouring of points from Mitchell, I think at 36, 38 points. I'm not very efficient shooting, but he still got his. And, you know, you got to wonder about these other guys. You know, Caris LeVert, nowhere to be seen. Isaac Okoro couldn't make a shot. And, you know, these are guys who are going to step up for the Cavs if they have any chance to do anything. So I think that was really my takeaway, was the fact that the Knicks bench was great, the Cavs bench was not, and the secondary stars for the Cavs looked tight. And even though, like, RJ had a rough shooting night, he still contributed in other ways with six assists. You know, Garland had a real bad turnover night, and, you know, if you're Cleveland, you know, you got to be a little bit concerned about the way your other two guys performed in this game.
But, and most importantly, Omar, can you believe that we actually won the free throws?
Yeah,
in a game.
Huge.
How many times has that happened this season?
Not many.
yeah, I mean, they were, what, 15 from 21?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that may only be, what, 3 or 4 points difference, but, you know, that was huge.
Counts. Yeah, that's the difference of winning and losing in the playoffs, right? You hit a few free throws, and all of a sudden you're in a better spot. And the Knicks, I mean, they were in control of this game throughout most of it, up until one point where the Cavs had a 9-0 run to take a lead. But it was, you know, a great performance by the team in that sense. But again, not their greatest output offensively. So to be able to go through allow your key players struggling and still come out with the win, and you're on the road, is just a great thing. But I do want to ask this. Obviously, in a playoff series, coaches are going to make adjustments. So what, after game one, what do you guys see as the adjustments that we should be looking for from both the Knicks and the Cavs?
I think for the Knicks, I think it's just practice your shooting. Do you know? especially certain players should be in there till midnight in the next couple of days. Getting their shots up. So, a lot of that can come down to nerves, and a lot of the excuses that were coming out from the Cavs were about how inexperienced their team was in playoff wise. But I think plenty of people jumped all over that and added up all the Knicks' playoff experience, and it was much less. So, you know, I think there was a bit of nerves from both teams. The atmosphere went up and down, but the atmosphere at times was excellent, you know, and, you know, that's a tough place to play in that atmosphere. So there was a little bit of that. So I don't think there's any huge adjustments for the Knicks to make. Just be more confident, now that we've got that game one under the belt, hopefully that should help relax players a little bit. And just keep going the way they're doing, because it's not a complicated game that the Knicks played. You know, it's, you know, a lot of it's just down to fight and heart and so just keep that going. I don't think there's anything hugely different that has to be made. So, Cavs wise, I mean, there's plenty. I mean, you can see. You sent out that link earlier, Omar, about, you know, how the Cavs fans are starting to panic a little bit already. I see some of the excuses that are coming out are ridiculous. They've said, I love that one about how the Knicks can't play any better, so at least the Cavs know that. And you're like, well, Not really. I don't think one player you could say that was the performance of the season or anything like that. You know, that was them playing at their apex.
I mean, you could say that for Josh Hart, probably, but
possibly, yeah. I mean, he's had plenty of games like that this season. So
we had one guy coming off the bench with double digit points. It wasn't Emmanuel Quickley. So there's that. Quickley gets more points. Grimes didn't hit a three. He hit one three, missed a couple of shots. So we will shoot better. We will have better opportunities out there. So it's dumb to say we can play better. And Julius Randle had 19 points on 7 of 20 shooting. That's not Julius Randle. That's injured Julius Randle, the villain. So it's ridiculous to say we can't be better. It's ridiculous to say the Caps can't be better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Both teams can play. The game was fun, but if you look at it as a neutral, like, oh, what are these teams doing in the playoffs? Like, missing all these shots, all these turnovers. It was not an elite playing game. There was a lot of defense, tell you that. We can see that both teams played a good defense. And, I mean, for the Knicks, in terms of adjustments, let me get this. Well, why change what worked in game one? Because I think our game plan worked, even though Donovan Mitchell had, you said, at 30-something points, 38 or 6 or whatever, 38 points. I mean, the rest of the team wasn't effective. The second guy with most shots was Evan Mobley, and he was missing shots left, right, and center. So it's we kind of the guard play of the Cavs. We did an amazing job making that as much as possible of keeping the ball out of those two guards' hands and letting him force inside with shots from Evan Mobley, who's not the greatest shooter or finisher as well. So we did a tremendous job there, even though Mitchell could, if he goes off, he goes off. Josh Hart was throwing every arm available to him, and Donovan Mitchell was still making shots. So to me, I said it, the Cavs, well, they need to share the ball. There was a point in the game they didn't even try. Maybe Donovan Mitchell felt that the guys around him were tight, like you said, Omar, but he needs to trust those players in order to win. It's the big adjustment they need to do, because you look at the guys from Cleveland, three of those played more than 40 minutes. Jared Allen, the center, played 42 minutes. Donovan Mitchell played 43. Garland played 43. You're playing on the other side guys who Julius Randle, the injured Julius Randle, had the most minutes. Load management. Tibbs laughs at that. 33 minutes. It was the most, but it's 33 minutes. It's the most minutes in the Knicks. 33 for Randle, 31 for Barrett, 29 for Brunson. Josh Hart played 32. So we had three guys with 30 plus. Mm-hmm. They had three with 40 plus. So that's an adjustment I think that the Cavs should make, because our bench being much, much better than theirs, comparing for all of the games, I think the Cavs need to, if they want to win this series, I think they need to adjust to that. Because game seven of 40 plus minutes, even if it goes to game seven, it takes a toll on the players.
Yeah, for sure. And with the Knicks, for me, guys, I think there's a lot of like sloppy transition play that we saw from the team, like bad pass from Randle, miscommunication from Brunson or RJ Quickley, even, you know, and I think they got to tighten that up. Obviously, you mentioned like shot making, you know, the team was real bad from three, and they need Quickley and Grimes and RJ and Julius to get more efficient in shooting from three. And so you need to focus on that. But otherwise, you know, I'm curious to see if they continue the same way of kind of trapping Mitchell, or they're just going to be content with him getting his and just keying in on slowing down Garland and Mobley. So that should be kind of something to watch for Cleveland. There's a lot that they need to do. Shedi Osman on on Brunson was definitely a choice. Not seeing LeVert in there that often, not Okoro was obviously very disappointing as well. And the way that Mobley was finishing inside, you might have to wonder if they kind of go away from Mobley because Hartenstein and Mitch kind of had him locked up, which, we'll talk about in a little bit here.
Mobley started fantastic. He had two great plays very early on and then just seemed to vanish. But that's one of the criticisms from what I understand, that, he just doesn't have that real kind of fight in him. He doesn't have that real aggressiveness, which every team needs in the playoffs. You need that kind of play. And I think some of his teammates are getting quite, frustrated with him in a way, because he just seems to go into his shell a little bit. Just not strong enough, not powerful enough.
That's the thing, right? Like, he is dealing with Hartenstein, Randall, and Mitch, and Josh Hart as well, and he's just kind of getting bullied around there. So I think the Cavs, the last thing, emphasis should be on the rebounding, because that's honestly what lost them this game down the stretch, timely offensive rebounds from Hartenstein, Randall, and Mitch, and Hart, and you then give the Knicks more opportunities. And we've learned this all year that the Knicks' best offense could be offensive rebounding, being able to kind of get a quick open look off of an offensive rebound. And they're very good at it. And the Cavs have been a very bad defensive rebounding team, and it really showed in game one.
You got that guy, Lamar Stevens as well. Sorry, Rafa. I was expecting him to play, but
I was surprised he didn't get any run as well. Yeah, that surprised me.
Yeah, just going to say that the Knicks, only two guys didn't have an offensive rebound. So that shows. It was RJ and Quickly, but all the rest, they had offensive rebounds. Josh Hart had five. Mitchell Robinson had five. Hartenstein had two, and Randall had two. One humongous offensive rebound. I mean, the point of that, Evan Mobley in the defense, it's – look at it, because – Jared Allen had 14 rebounds. Mm-hmm. It's not bad. Evan Mobley had 11. But other than that, they didn't have much help. That's the problem that I think there exists, because Mobley and Allen are battling our centers and our power forwards and our guys around there, and their guards don't rebound as well. Like, they don't have a Josh Hart to grab 10 rebounds. Julius Randle had 10. Mitchell Robinson had 8. Hartenstein had 5. I mean, Obi Toppin had 4. Quickly had 3. 5 from Quentin Grimes, plus 4 from RJ. I mean, the Cavs didn't have that. That's why we beat them 51-38 in rebounds. So if they have Jared Allen and Mobley, they should kill us on the boards. That's what people were saying. So, well, kind of not happening. I saw on Twitter a few Cavs fans going back and forth with ideas because of offensive rebounding. It's like there was a board that Isaiah Hartenstein, offensive rebound that Isaiah Hartenstein gained. When Brunson took the shot, Mobley had Isaiah Hartenstein out of bounds. Like, he got him out of bounds boxing out. And none of the three guards around them could grab the Cavs could grab that rebound. I mean, Isaiah Mobley did a poor job here, but I saw that they saw the clip. It was Isaiah Hartenstein getting from out of bounds around Evan Mobley, around Garland and Mitchell, grabbing the offensive rebound. So there is more than just the big guys not grabbing the boards, because they lead the game in boards. It's the rest of the team helping out, and the Knicks did a really good job, and we usually do a good job on that, helping out on the defensive rebounds. While offensively, it's Mitchell Robinson to grab all the rebounds. Defensively, we have a very team effort there, and that showed again. And there's another way where the Knicks are in advantage against the Cavs. It's that team play that we have a shortened rotation for half the year, so we know how to play with this shortened rotation. It's nothing new. The adjustments coming playoff times, well, there's no adjustments for us, so it's an advantage for you.
So let's jump into some player performance. So we're kind of gonna, each one of us has been assigned three players, and we're just kind of give our takeaway from each of those players. Obviously, we might disagree with one another, so you might see some interference. So let's start with Alex and start with our best player, Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, nice easy one to start with. What can you say about him? Yeah, exactly. He's, you know, I've said many times, and when we talked about the key to this, the kind of X factor or whatever, last time, I said I think his kind of experience and his kind of calm head and in these kind of pressure situations are just is so vital. And the fact he got in the foul trouble early, which a couple of, yeah, a bit silly kind of ridiculous calls, but you know, he came back in the second half and just you know, just kind of took the game to the Cavs. And such a massive kind of calming influence when, you know, when the Cavs did take the lead, you know, and that's been the main difference this season, I think, is having somebody that can just calm everybody down and just take the game on, you know, take the team on his back and just kind of lead the team home. So he was absolutely fantastic. Well, I mean, you were talking about minutes earlier, Rafa. I think he was about 29, so but yeah. Yeah, I mean, he ended up with three personal fouls. He didn't get any more in the second half, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, I thought he was fantastic. So
nothing else you could really say about Brunson.
Yeah,
he,
man.
He was just doing what he's been doing all year, just
so consistent,
taking control.
Yeah, it's just not one of those guys. He's so reliable, so consistent, and it's just fantastic.
You know, John Macri for Knicks Film School had an interesting point on his post game yesterday about Brunson, where in the past we would play against teams and they'd have a superstar and they would just like make timely buckets. And we would always say, oh man, what if we had somebody like that, right? Well, now we do. It's Jalen Brunson. And he is, again, when the game looked like it was kind of slipping from our grasp, there's Brunson with, you know, just abusing, getting to a spot on Osman, just hitting a mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper, getting to the basket at ease. And, you know, he really was, you know, it's everything you wanted him to be and more in this game. Let's go to, I guess, probably the most polarizing player on Knicks Twitter from the yesterday. Let's go to Rafa with RJ Barrett.
Well, let's forget all the controversy. He didn't have a perfect game.
Yeah.
He didn't have it. I don't think any Knick, or maybe apart from Brunson forgetting the fouls, had a perfect game. Shooting wise, RJ Barrett didn't have a good night. He didn't. He made two shots, a hook shot or whatever, over Donovan Mitchell and a three. In fact, it was a pretty good. The shot to hit, it was that one. He had a pretty good three, stopping the momentum from the Cavs. After that, he shoot an air ball, so he even did
balance.
It.
Yeah, balance.
terrible. Oh my god. Shooting wise, he didn't. It was again. He didn't have a good game. But we were talking, and I thought he had a pretty. All else concerned, he had a pretty good game. It was he was reliable on defense. What? Sorry.
An impactful game.
Playmaking was there, which you like love to see from him. Yeah.
Exactly. That's to me, that's the big takeaway from RJ Barrett in during this game one, is that first half when Brunson was in foul trouble, entire first half, and Julius Randle was still that came out early, which was surprising. But in Tibbs we trust. He really, and especially with Emmanuel Quickly having a rough night, because he didn't make a shot. He was turning the ball over, and it was RJ. The ball was in RJ's hands, and he made things happen. He made things moving the ball. He had six assists that game. He could have had more. I don't know how many Aki assists he could have had that game if this was a thing. So I think he made it happen penetrating. He was going at will, penetrating at will there. Again, Okoro and LeVert couldn't stop him. Garland couldn't do anything as well. Mitchell, they're not good defenders, at least Mitchell and Garland, not elite. So he was getting to his spot, not forcing this shot, which is good. I mean, the shots he missed, it's not, well, you're open shoot. It's okay, you missed it. Well, you saw that all night from everyone. But again, defensively, I think he was really impactful defensively, which was the more surprising. He came out very aggressive on defense, making a statement. And that first half, I was looking to things again from the game. They tried to play whoever offense on RJ Barrett, and that kind of failed. RJ was doing it, setting his ground, setting his own, and the help defense was there. So that kind of failed, and so they went away from it. So RJ Barrett had, to me, a pretty good game. Obviously, only 7 points, which we want more from him. People are talking about, we win by 4 and he is minus 13. Yeah, well, Mitchell Robinson was minus 15 and Julius Randle was minus 8. Who cares? We won game one of the playoffs. Yeah. It's, dude, please stop the narratives. We won game one away from home. It's a massive win. The team played a very gutsy performance. I think that's the big takeaway from this, even from the RJ game, is a gutsy performance. And those little things, to me, that people don't see it, they're prisoners of the moment. That turnover, that costly turnover, that air ball, were not great or terrible. I let out a very audible, for fuck's sake, RJ. It's probably woke up the neighborhood. but yeah, but it was a gutsy performance. And that first half where RJ was penetrating at will and disrupting the defense, that's what maybe forced in the second half, okay, let's make Seti Osman on Brunson instead of another guy and leave RJ with Donovan Mitchell. He was with Donovan Mitchell a bit, but that ability to penetrate and to control in the first half made him play a little bit more safer, even with Brunson and Randle on the floor against RJ. So I don't think he had a terrible game. I don't think he had an amazing game, but he was effective.
I mean, the main thing is, let's clear it up right now. Anybody who, like, because a lot of people were in their instant reaction was, they need to bench this guy. You know, he's unplayable, you know, like, but they're not looking at the playmaking, at the good defense they had. The shooting was bad. You know, there's no, you know, kind of sugarcoating it. 2 for 12, you don't want that. You know, you want him to be able to shoot at better efficiency again, but you also want Quickly and Grimes to shoot at better efficiency. So you're hoping that he could kind of maybe find a little bit of more of a groove in throughout later in the series, but overall, I think he was okay. You know, he wasn't great, but he also wasn't terrible like people are making him out to be. And, you know, if a couple of those threes or a couple of those shots go in, we're probably having a very different conversation about RJ today. You know, if he was 5 for 12 instead of 2 for 12, we're probably, you know, discussing this a little bit in a different text right now. Okay, let's go over to me. Let's do Julius Randle. So... last week, we didn't know if he was going to play, right? You know, everybody was like, oh, he might miss the first couple games. And then it came out later in the week that he was going to play. And, you know, you look at the final stat line, you mentioned the plus minus, Rafa. We've talked earlier about his 7 for 20 performance. But it is very important to remember that he kept the team afloat in the first half when Brunson was in foul trouble. You know, he hit a couple of real timely shots. I felt like his passing was pretty good. He made a couple of bad ones in transition, but overall, I think he was doing well in that regard. I know a lot of Cleveland fans are kind of up in arms about the whole little arm locking with Allen and Mitchell kind of getting in his face or whatever. But I thought, in my reaction to that was that, you know, Randle kept his head. He was not as fired up as he has been throughout the regular season, especially later post All-Star break. And, you know, it looks like he has his head on right for this series, and we're going to need that. And there is no discounting that offensive rebound he got to help seal it to get the ball over to Grimes was probably the biggest rebound in Julius Randle's career up until now. And I think we're probably upon the precipice of looking at him in a different light if they win this series. Again, to mention Macri, something he said, that if they win the series, it's very easy to say that he's a top 20 Knick of all time, you know? And I don't think that's ridiculous, you know? And he was excellent. I think he'll get his legs back a little bit better in game two. He has a couple more days to rest now. And I think that, you know, we're obviously happy that Julius is back. He had a really impactful game. And I look for more of the same in the game too. And he was really able to overpower Mobley in stretches. You know, Mobley does a great defender. There's no doubting that. But Julius just raw strength kind of overpowered him, especially on the glass. So looking to see more of that.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of mind games with the injury.
Yeah.
But he clearly wasn't 100% as well. You saw him on a couple of occasions just looking a little bit. Kind of looking down at his ankle, kind of it was one time I thought he had a little bit of a limp as well. I think that he was definitely there, and just from the fact of him being out for 17 days, that's obviously a negative. You know,
he's going to be a little
bit rusty. Yeah. So yeah, whether there was mind games involved, I don't know, but I don't think the Cavs would have fallen for that. I think certainly leading up to the game, I think everybody pretty much knew he was going to play. So. But I was so impressed the way he came out. It seems to have been just a kind of regular thing with Randle that, you know, he comes out firing the first and second quarter and then tails off in the second half. I don't know if that's you know, how much effort he puts into the first half. He just kind of loses his legs a little bit, but I don't know. It seems to have been something that's going on all season, but I think sometimes he just gives so much in the first half that he just kind of burns himself out a little bit.
And important to note, guys, that's probably for the benefit of the team because they've kind of been relying on Brunson and sometimes Quickly even to kind of really turn it on in the second half, and Brunson, especially in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's kind of like a good balance there. You know, you get Julius kind of hitting them with haymakers early on and then kind of Brunson kind of closing them out in the fourth quarter, which, you know, has been working for them all year. No reason to believe that they'll stop doing that in this series. Let's move on, though, to Josh Hart. Alex.
Well, again, just like with Brunson, what else can you say? Nice and easy one again. Just there was times where I was just like, I could not believe how good this guy was. Do you know, he was just absolutely everywhere. He was doing everything.
But what about the draft pick, Alex? What about the draft pick and Cam Reddish that we gave up for this guy?
Yeah, Cam Reddish, remember him? Yeah.
Never speak of him again, please. Done. We're never bringing him up again. It's over.
Oh, I saw him mentioned today, actually. I saw him, like,
of course.
Oh, Cam would have done at least better than RJ in this game. Oh, I was just like, oh my god, right, okay. But I was a little bit, I mean, we'll go on to talk about Grimes in a moment, but I expected basically Grimes to be stuck to Mitchell the whole game. Hart seems to, you know, taken on quite a big part of that defense as well. So then there's the big three-pointer, which was a real game-turner as well.
What an iconic moment,
It was an ugly shot. I think the clock was kind of coming down a bit. The defense was all over. There was nobody open, really. And I think he just, you know, took his moment. You know, and he has been shooting well from three all year. So, well, certainly since he came to the Knicks. So.
Yeah.
But it's just going to be, I guess, one of those stories. I think a lot like 2 years ago with Derrick Rose, you know, it was just that pivotal move, you know, mid season that, you know, it was just like a fantastic signing that just kicked the team on. Just from a kind of you know team bonding kind of way as well. He just seems to be such a likable guy that everybody gets on with. So. just a perfect playoff player, as I think I described him yesterday. He's just like one of those guys that's got all hustle, you know.
Draymond Green has a term that there's 82 game players and there's 16 game players,
yeah,
meaning 16 games to win you a championship in the playoffs. And mm-hmm. Josh Hart's a 16 game player. He's the glue guy, the guy you want that's going to make those key plays in the playoff in a playoff series.
Yeah,
it's funny how it's his first playoff game, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, when you know, you know.
Just his style of play, his style of play. You know his style of play. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know what you need but in the playoffs.
Just to that shot he made. It's the most that play. We're down again against the Cavs. Like we're down in the first quarter. Him throwing it up. I was like, oh my god, what's happening? And the ball went in, and it's like, okay, it's this guy can do whatever he wants as a Knick. I don't like it was an amazing basket, man. It's well,
yeah, nothing left to say. Offensive rebounding was great. He scored a bunch. The most unstoppable play in for the Knicks right now is probably Josh Hart coast to coast off a rebound. He just has that downhill speed. He just gets to the spot and can finish so well at the rim. And those are those kind of games,
I see a bit of Jimmy Butler in them, the way he plays. Those coast to coast as well, just the way he's kind of quite shifty, kind of going to the basket as well.
Guys, just imagine what the Garden is going to sound like in game 3 or 4 if he does a couple of those, and you know, they're pivotal for them to kind of take a lead in the game type thing. Let's go to Rafa next with do the big man combo, you know, with Mitch and Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah, I think it's what I have to say. It's combines well up with the two of them because their job is basically battle out the two big men from the Cavs, yep. Mobley and Jared Allen. Just wear them down. Just be out there being a nuisance to them, and well, making life easier for our guards and even Julius Randle to work out the way they like to work out, like the Brunson and it's with the penetration and everything. Randle with the isolation and then. And then the amazing job they do to allow other guys to grab those defensive rebounds or offensive rebounds. I think it will be a lot of sacrifice involved, especially with Mitchell Robinson. And, you know, he likes to have his offense and like his cardio, but it's very, very important that he is, they both are, him and Hartenstein are focused on their jobs here. Mm-hmm. Hartenstein had an amazing offensive rebound as well late, a couple of them, I think. They both played tremendously well quietly. You don't see those blocks or anything else. I think Hartenstein blocked a shot there from Donovan Mitchell. But it was like the way they played it, there will be so important to stopping those big men from coming out and helping out on defense on penetrations from Brunson or RJ or Randle or Quickly or whoever it is. So I think their game one, they did it perfectly, even though they got out rebounded one-on-one. Let's just hope they continue in this trend and letting the other guys work. Normally Josh Hart, we mentioned before, for example.
Yeah, you saw them just really kind of tighten up in the paint on those twin towers that Cleveland has, and I don't think you can say enough about how well both of these guys have played. Mitch and Hartenstein they've really kind of developed a really good 1-2 punch down low, and Mitch fumbled a couple of entry passes that could have been nice easy dunks. Unfortunate, but you know that's. It's something that's part of the Mitchell Robinson experience. You know, he's going to, you know, maybe mishandle a ball here and there. But overall, you know, I don't have much negative to say about either of them. I think they both played really well, especially on the defensive end and on the offensive glass. Again, Hartenstein had a big tap out offensive rebound that was pivotal for the team down the stretch. All right. Yep. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just going to say, I can't really add much more to that. Yep. I agree that the thing I'm quite impressed with Mitchell in the past is, you know, shown a bit of immaturity that he seems to kind of want to be the main man, the kind of star player sort of thing. He wants the ball more and all that kind of stuff. But I've been impressed by the, as you said, you know, the fact that they seem to be a good combo and they seem to get on and you know, on the court. I don't know what they're like off court, but on court they seem to have a good chemistry. So a kind of nice blend of styles.
I would love to see Hartenstein kind of show Mitch that little push shot that he's kind of perfected now. That 8 feet away, you know, kind of a little push shot there. If Mitch could have that as a threat, I think that would make him a lot more interesting offensively. But you know, maybe I'm asking for too much. But you know,
just seeing Robin Lopez on the bench for the Cavs. Remember that kind of hook shot he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get for the next, you know, even something like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing went in, but it was certainly a sight to behold. That's for sure. Not the most elegant looking shot, but hey, if it goes in, it goes in, right? You know, so yeah. Let's switch over to Obi Toppin. So Obi, I think, was really important in this game because they took out Randall pretty quickly early on, you know, and yeah. Obi gave them really good minutes, you know, like wasn't a complete liability defensively, got out on a couple of breaks for some dunks. That one pass from Brunson that found him right under the basket from the other end was just incredible. But yeah, he provided them great minutes. And I do want to, we're going to talk about Tibbs in a second, but I do want to credit Tibbs for sticking with him. And, you know, letting him kind of stay out there for a little while, hit a three, you know, he performed really well in his time, and he made the most of his minutes, was very impactful offensively. And again, not a complete liability defensively, which, you know, has happened with him in the past. And yeah, I think as Randall is still kind of recovering, you need that from Obi to be able to have success in this series. And, you know, especially with that Cavs bench unit, like we talked about, it's not great. And that gives him opportunity to kind of flourish. And he took the most of his opportunity to me. Did you guys see anything from Obi that stuck out to you?
Well, just on Tibbs, he did pick him out in the press conference as well. Made a note, which he doesn't always do. He doesn't normally talk about Obi at all, which I thought was interesting to see. But yeah, no, I was impressed. Yeah, he's... Whereas I know we're going to talk about quickly in a moment, but he didn't seem nervous at all. He seemed confident and positive, and you know, just doing Obi things, you know. And I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, I think he filled the role perfectly, like what we needed from him in that stretch. Again, especially with Brunson out as well, because Brunson went out and Randall is out of the game, and you're looking at the rotation of Grimes, Quickly, RJ, Mitchell Robinson, and Obi Toppin in the playoffs for game one. Like, what's happening? Has Tibbs lost his mind? What is happening here? And I think that first shot he took in that three-pointer and that went in was massive. Like, okay, I took the first shot. It's in. I got it out of my system. And things started flowing with him. He started... Defensively, he is still a little bit rough. I think, Alex, you mentioned at the beginning of the pod, like how Mobley started out hot because Obi Toppin was in. So it's the two kind of relate. That Julius Randle uses to stop Mobley, Toppin can't. So it's a thing. But he did his job. I'm not here to criticize Obi Toppin. He had 9 points, but felt more points than the nine. He had a tremendous game, and we were able to rest Randall more because of Toppin playing so well. So
those are the type of minutes you want to see from Obi all series. You know, good productive, you know, 14 to 16 minutes. You know, while he's out there. Let's go toss it back to Alex for. Mr. Clutch himself with his late free throws, Quentin Grimes.
Mr. Untouchable. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, The game just didn't go the way I expected it to for Grimes. You know, I expected them much more involved and, you know, on expected them defensively, you know, all over Mitchell. Expected them to, you know, to be taken. Well, I mean, he took four threes in the end, but, you know, I expected him to be a real kind of centerpiece of the offense. The idea being that I thought the Cavs would be defending Brunson and Randall to such an extent that, you know, I thought Brett Grimes might be wide open quite a lot, but the game just didn't go the way I thought. But, you know, he still had a big impact in the game. I think defensively in general, he was excellent. And most importantly, he hit those free throws at the end, which I was so impressed by. You know, he's second year player, first playoff game. And yeah, just the first one was a little bit shaky, but second one was straight through. So yeah, so impressed. I think those free throws was what I celebrated the most, apart from the Randall rebound. I think those free throws, I was like, yeah, screaming the house down.
Yeah, you obviously want him to be more involved, right? You want him to, you know, be able to take a few more shots, hit a few threes. But, you know, hit the free throws overall. He was kind of quiet, you know. He didn't really, you know, we talked about Garland being kind of quiet for the Cavs earlier. But, yeah, I think Grimes was kind of quiet, to your point, Alex, quieter than I thought he would be. I thought he would get a few more looks, a few more opportunities to kind of get some blow-bys, get to the basket. But, you know, it didn't happen. And, you know, I'm curious to see if that changes at all in game two.
He had a solid game defensively, and that's remember last week I said that Grimes probably was going to guard Donovan Mitchell more than what we saw this game, but he was very solid defensively. He was always a presence defensively, and that's where he took most of his energy to the defense, allowing other guys to function on offense. His shot wasn't really falling. He had, he missed three shots, but those two of them, that sequence with him and Emmanuel Quickly just missing back three short, three short, three short. Like, can you go hit the gym, please? A few weights. It was ridiculous. Having Mike Breen going three short, three short. Like, defensively, he was tremendous. He did his job. I think it's the main focus on Quentin Grimes this series is defense. I don't think we're going to see him shoot 20 points or 25 points. Right. It's not that kind of series.
Yeah, he's there to defend Mitchell, help defend Garland. You know, that's going to be his primary task, you know, and which is no easy task, to be clear.
Was his 1-3 not like a crazy bank shot as well?
Yeah, it was. Go figure. He thought all the threes were coming in when he went to the bank. You know, the bank is always open, as they say. So let's close out with probably the worst performance of anybody. It's Emmanuel Quickly. It's been mentioned a couple times now. He didn't score any points. Missed every shot he took. Rebounding was okay. The defense was okay. He had some free throws, right? Yeah. He's got to be better. I mean, there's no way around it. This team, is second unit, is not as potent as it can be without Quickly scoring some baskets. And, you know, you're hoping that he rebounds in game two and is able to kind of take advantage again, because that Cavs second unit is just not very good, you know? So you would hope that they would be able to kind of capitalize on that. But again, there's just something to be said about Cavs defense is really good. Their interior defense is good. Excellent, actually. And, you know, he struggled with that. And you're hoping that he could kind of maybe find his groove. He had a few open looks and they just weren't dropping, you know? And that's the story of IQ, unfortunately. You know, you ride the wave when he's hot, but when he's off, he's really off. And last night he was really off. So that's something you're hoping that, you know, can shift as this series goes on.
Yeah, I mean, the most surprising thing to me was is seemingly lack of confidence. He seemed to be very hesitant, just in his shell a wee bit, like, which is just not him. He only took two threes, five shots overall, you know, and no, he hit none of them, but that's, you know, he just didn't seem active at all. He was 23 minutes, but I felt like I hardly saw him out there, you know, because usually he's all action and, you know, all over the court. But hopefully this is, we've got away with one, and you know, this is one stinker of the series, and you know, the rest of the series, he's going to be back to his usual self. So yeah, really surprised.
That's how much IQ. Even he shoots a lot. He's a guy who shoots the ball when he's out there, and he didn't have it. And just like RJ in a way, and Quentin Grimes, okay, offensively we're not going. Let's just play our role on defense and let Brunson and Julius Randle go at it. That's what happened. I mean, IQ played 23 minutes, like you said. I mean, defensively, he was playing good defense, like usual. He had a couple of turnovers there, which hurt him in the first half. And to be fair, since Brunson barely played in the first half, it was normal that he was going to play more in the second half. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we saw a little of Quickly in the second half, because he played more in the first one because Brunson wasn't available. So, and he wasn't as effective offensively as we are used to see him. Those shots weren't falling. He got to the line two times, I think. Yeah, he had 3 points. So even though he had a terrible game, well, he played good defense. He was a gutsy guy. There's a play going on Twitter. Like, he guarded three guys in the same play from the three-point line, Quickly just running around. That's Emmanuel Quickly for you. Even if his shot isn't falling, he plays good defense. And it fits right into what Grimes did and what Josh Hart did as well. But he got a couple of points last night, but he was playing tremendous defense. Like, they're all playing team defense and playing together, which is, he had a good game from that direction.
All right. So let's go over to the bench. Let's talk a little bit about Tom Thibodeau. Tibbs had a really well-coached game, guys. He did an excellent job. So I guess, what was your reaction to what you saw from the coaching perspective from Thibodeau last night? Starting off with Alex.
He was so solid. He had to change the game plan quite a bit with the Brunson foul trouble, Randle getting taken out early. There was lots of adjustments to be made, but I think general agreement is that, you know, he got them all right. He wasn't up against, Bickerstaff is obviously much more less experienced than Tibbs, and I think in those situations, Tibbs won that battle quite easily. Some really kind of strange decisions from the other side. And as I've said to you guys loads of times, you know, that, you know, even when Tibbs makes mistakes, you know, if you actually look at all the other coaches in the league, you know, they make mistakes too. You know, there's so many decisions to be made for every NBA game, and, you know, you're not going to get them all right. But I think the key ones Tibbs got right in this one, and it really showed. So, yeah, really happy for him. You know, I think he played a big part in the win.
Yeah, I think Tibbs, when we look at coaches, well, Tibbs won the game, clearly. So you can look at the players, but the way that the things worked around, the rotations and everything, how he didn't feel the... maybe because one had foul trouble, the other is still recovering from injury, but how he didn't overplay anyone, you know, he let the bench hang around with the Cavs starters, and it worked. I think he outcoached the what's his name, the Cavs coach. I don't remember.
Bickerstaff.
I don't know it. Bickerstaff. Yeah. He got outcoached by Tibbs. Tibbs is bit at anything. He tried to adjust. I don't think he tried to adjust the right things that Tibbs did. I mean, Tibbs didn't make the adjustments offensively. He made the adjustments defensively, and we played a tremendous defensive game. And the Cavs really had no answer other than Donovan Mitchell putting up tough shots and making those tough shots, some of them. So it was the only way they had answer. If the Knicks were more effective, we talked about how the missing transition passes, silly passes, really, missing wide open shots. I mean, there were a few moments in that game that if we played a more effective game, we could have killed the game much, much, much earlier. Like, we had always had a rough passes. That sequence that Randall missed the alley-oop to Mitch, or Mitch, no, Mitch missed a dunk, and they come the other way, we steal the ball, and Randall misses the pass, and they get easy points. That's 4 points we could have had there that killed momentum, that forced a timeout and everything. So we had a couple of moments that we could have killed that game. And Tibbs, big timeout. I think it was a great timeout. Beginning of the fourth quarter, 1 minute in, call timeout immediately while we're still ahead. Remember, we talking that he should have called timeout earlier throughout the season. He should have called timeout before, but he did call the timeout at the exact moment we needed to hold that game together. So props to Tibbs. Tibbs, we trust, man.
Just sorry, Omar, just one thing before you move on. Like, you mentioned a lot today about the difference in the benches. Well, clearly, you know, the Cavs moved all in with Mitchell. You know, they went for their star players. They've gone for a top-heavy team. You know, with Tibbs, he has more options to look. It's a much deeper roster because we haven't gone that route yet. So from that side, it is a little must, you know, when your star players, your starters aren't producing, like the Cavs had a few, then, you know, you look at your bench and you don't have that depth to kind of turn to and kind of go for other options. So I think from that side of things, it gives Tibbs a little bit of an easier job, that he's got more options to choose when things have to be adjusted.
I'm just going to put it plainly, guys. Tom Thibodeau ran circles around J.B. Bickerstaff yesterday. This was just an exhibition. You know what kind of reminded me of? You know how you hear players tell stories about Kobe Bryant? When, like, the first time they played Kobe, and Kobe was just going to, like, was just on another level, had, like, 100 moves to throw at them, and they didn't know what to do. That's what this feels like to me, you know, where Thibodeau just was in such control. He threw in staggered lineups. He made the right adjustments. Like, Mitchell was torching them in the first half. And in the second half, you know, there was he made changes to the way they were covering him. His scheme for the inside with Mobley and protecting the rim was effective. You know, hit Mobley finished only 4 for 13, like we've talked about before. And, you know, Bickerstaff, like, he didn't really have an answer for what Thibodeau was doing. When they went to Jalen Brunson ISOs and stuff, he's throwing Osman on them, even though he's getting beat every time. And meanwhile, Thibodeau was just kind of orchestrating everything, timely timeouts, like you mentioned, Rafa. And it was just a masterful game. The only thing I think, like, he probably, when he pulled RJ in the fourth, that he probably did it a couple possessions too late, but that's so minor, you know. It's just like, it's such a minor thing, and not even worth mentioning, even though I mentioned it. And I just can't say enough. We've, like, Knicks fans as a whole, we've collectively, you know, given this guy the business on more than one occasion, but, you know, credit where it's due. He showed why he's such an experienced and, you know, highly thought of coach in this league. And, I think that's a big matchup advantage that we have is the coaching, you know, something that not many people talked about. You know, everybody, of course, is going to focus on Mitchell and Brunson and Randall and Mobley and all that stuff. But, you know, the Thibodeau Bickerstaff situation, that's one where the Knicks have a big advantage. And I think it really helped them seal this game. And like you said, Rob, if a couple of those little mistakes don't happen in transition, we might be looking at a totally different game, you know, than this close one that we had late in the fourth. So, props to Tibbs. Great job coaching. Please continue doing the same stuff that you were doing in game one throughout the series. That would be very nice.
Basically.
Much appreciated. But, you know, while we're talking about Cleveland, let's kind of close out what we saw from Cleveland. I guess what stood out to you guys the most about the Cavs' performance against the Knicks in game one?
I was surprised in the inactivity of Garland. I was surprised how Mobley played. I was expecting a lot more from him. Mitchell gave what he's expected. Okoro struggled, but he can struggle shooting wise. That's nothing new. He's not there to be a shooter. He's there to be a defensive player first and foremost. So. I was surprised by the performance. They did seem to, you know, be full of nerves, full of, I don't know if that's, you know, playing at home. Sometimes I think, you know, almost playing on the road is an advantage in the game one, just to kind of deal with that expectation. And, you know, especially with the Knicks being such a good road team, I think, you know, I didn't actually mind playing on the road first two games. So, I was a little bit surprised at how I was expecting a lot more from Mobley, especially. So, again, it just seems to be that they're just getting overpowered at the moment. So, it'll be really interesting to see what I was going to say about the as well. We were talking about Tibbs about how. You know, underrated it is having that kind of experience at this time of the season in the playoffs and having that playoff kind of experience. But also, you know, everybody's so obsessed with having these young coaches and coaches for this era. And, you know, can you kind of keep all these young guys happy and things? Well, this is the test now. You know, the Cavs have got this young and experienced coach. Well, not young, but, you know, he's an experienced coach at that level. You know, is he going to make the adjustments for game two? And you know, what's he going to do? So,
I think we talked about this. That what surprises me was how tight the and how nervous the Cavs started the game. They just never seemed to be in that game like stress free. Only Donovan Mitchell. I think that's why he tried to take over that game and his game to win and his game to lose. And if the game two, if the Knicks start out well, because the Knicks start out well, we're up 9-2 or something like that. So it was a strong start from us. If we start out strong again, that might shake the confidence of the Cavs again and just make Donovan Mitchell go solo. Which to us, I think, is better if he goes solo, because their shot wasn't really falling. It was a plus as well, which made Donovan Mitchell go even more solo, that superstar mode. Let's say it like this. So he had an MVP chance at the arena. So but yeah, the tightness, the nervousness, how nervous they were. Kind of remind me of the Knicks versus the Hawks. Like, we were the fourth seed, we were like under pressure to prove ourselves, and we completely fumbled. I'm not saying we're gonna win in five games. I said in six, but it's right now it's only one game. The things shift tremendously in the playoffs. We know that, but right now we looked like the more mature and ready team to for the playoffs, and that's. To me, kind of a shocker that they're not more level at this time.
I guess for me, guys, it was you knew that they'd be reliant on Mitchell. I didn't think they'd be this reliant on him, you know. And like, it was basically, it reminded me kind of shades of like that run that Allen Iverson took the Sixers on, where he just was like, all right, I'm just going to will this team to victory kind of thing. And that's kind of what it felt like, because like you guys said, have said throughout this podcast, Garland was largely kind of, is one of the quietest 17 points you'll ever see in your life, with five turnovers and only one assist from a point guard who's a really high assist guy, you know, which is really interesting. Mobley, ineffective. Allen, you know, the stat line looks good, 14-14, but, you know, it feels kind of empty as you're watching it. Another thing is, you know, we talked about earlier, is that I knew their bench wasn't great, but man, like Caris LeVert, no show. Rubio, no show. Osman, you know,
5 minutes.
Rubio, yeah, I mean, five, yeah, minutes, which that's the thing. It's like you thought, well, yeah, you thought they could have, like you mentioned earlier, Alex, about not seeing Lamar Stevens. I thought we'd see him, and we didn't. And, you know, I also was pleasantly surprised that Okoro missed all of his shots, all of his threes, because I was just like thinking, man, they're going to leave Okoro open in the corner. He's going to go like 4 for 6. You know, it's just going to be annoying as hell, but that didn't happen, you know? And so, yeah, but really the reliance on Mitchell and just how poor their bench was, especially in comparison to the Knicks bench, was definitely something that stood out to me. And I'm curious to see how that's going to advance moving forward. And if maybe, like we talked about Lamar Stevens, if they decide to throw him into this rotation, if things continue to go south for that second unit for the Cavs.
Danny Green as well. I didn't realize Danny.
Hey, man, he's ready to go. Hit some shots. You know, yeah. I can't believe he's still in the league.
Kill us, basically. Well,
talking about playoff experience. Well, he's pretty much he's got
the gold standard of that, right?
Pretty good CV. Yeah. I also didn't realize that Luke Walton was on the bench for the Cavs.
Oh, I didn't know that either. So what you're saying is Nixon 4 because he's on the bench. You know, exactly. Bickerstaff used to be on Fizdale's staff in Memphis. I don't know if you guys knew that.
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, they mentioned it on the ESPN broadcast.
That explains it.
He's learned a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he's learned a ton from Fizdale. So
he's going to lose in 4 and smile about it.
Let's close this out, guys, before our game predictions for the rest of this next week of the series. Just kind of like a highlight and a low light in your eyes from game one. So, Alex, what you got?
Josh Hart's performance for me was my absolute highlight. I've been going on about it. I've been talking to my kids about it. They've got absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. I've just been
talking. Years later, Alex to his kids is going to be like, remember that one time when Josh Hart went 17-10 in game one against the Cavs? What a moment.
Best shot since 1999.
Ooh. Yeah. There's
a debate.
But absolute highlight for me. Fantastic. So, low light, you know, I went off in one on Twitter, quite a few people last night, about, you know, criticizing own players when you've had such a fantastic win, you know, especially, you know, straight after the game, you know, if you're gonna go in depth about a player's performance, you know, at least wait until the next day when the dust settled, and you know, you can talk about it. You've got 2 days to digest the whole thing. So, I really wouldn't say any kind of real lowlights from the Knicks' perspective. Obviously, there was a couple of bad shooting performances in there, but that happens. It's the famous Tibbs quote, I think, you know, that, you know, you don't have to shoot well to impact a game and to win a game. So, you know, that's perfectly shown in that game. So, I was just, I guess, disappointed and quickly. That was really my only thing. But, you know, it happens, you know, and as long as we're winning, you know, that's fine by me. So.
Yeah, that's my low light as well. Just the shooting. To pick a low light, the low light of the game, our shooting was terrible. Even Randall, who was 3 for 10 from 3, which is not good. That's called not good. We won game one, so it's called just not good. But our shooting needs to be better. The highlight for me is the. I said it, I think it's the most time I said it, the word gutsy, but it's the gutsy performance, the gutsy defense, the way we played against the Cavs, and we exactly like Alex said again, and Tibbs said, well, you know how it goes. The You don't need to shoot well to impact the game. That's what happened with quickly with the Grimes, with RJ, with Mitchell, Hartenstein. They are all just there playing defense and making plays happen for the offense to work. So for me, that's the way we played. So Gutsy so defensive mindedly, and we were really fierce on defense, really physical. That's the highlight for me in this game.
Yeah, for me, the highlight was Julius Randle being back. You know, that was, I mean, I would be honest, I was really skeptical about their chance to win the series if he missed a couple of games, you know, and he was back, he played well, you know, and he's going to be better in game two. So that was my highlight. My low light is RJ shooting.
He was out.
RJ shooting. Not just the fact that he missed a bunch of shots, but the reaction that Knicks fans have had to it. I just like, how are you going to try and just like talk about trading a player when you're in the middle of a playoff series and you're up 1-0 in the playoff series? Make it make sense. Like, you're down 3-0 and you know, you're going home, whatever, you know, that's one thing, but like, come on, you know, he had a bad game, whatever, move on. You won the game, you know, just be better next time. So yeah, of course I want him to make shots, but I really didn't like the way that Knicks fans kind of took that. Well, Knicks fans on Twitter, I'm not gonna besmirch the names of good Knicks fans who aren't a part of Knicks Twitter. But yeah, that to me was kind of the low light star reaction. Like, we're not even celebrating a win. We just wanted to say, oh man, this is what I've been telling you about RJ. Like, all right, guys, whatever. You know,
that's what I kept saying last night. I kept saying, is that really the first thing you thought of? After watching that game, do you know, is that your first reaction? Is that your first thought?
Yeah, man. If we lost this game, mm-hmm. like terribly lost the game, or lost the game because of some plays he made, or him, or whatever player he made, like, it's ridiculous to win game one and not celebrate the win. Just celebrate your narrative.
Only Knicks fans,
which is,
man.
But just faulty, a faulty, faulty narrative, basically. Like, but whatever. I said, fuck it. I'm celebrating the win. I don't care what you guys say about this or the other player. Just celebrate the win. It's the playoffs. I'd rather win with a guy I hate on the team. For some reason, I hate him, then lose with the guys I love. I mean, it's...
Yeah, of course. Least. Winning cures all, guys. We know that. It should cure all, but, you know, hopefully, you know, we don't got to worry about those discussions for too much longer. Real quick, though, after game one, has your guys' prediction on this series changed at all?
Definitely not. No, I think it's hard to predict a scoreline. In a series like this, you know, where the games are so tight and unpredictable, that I can just see this going back and forward all series and going to six or seven. So, I'm still thinking that the same thing, you know. But with these tight games, you know, one team can just sneak them, you know, and it can end up, the scoreline looks quite different. But I'm going to stick with the Knicks and seven.
Rafa?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned a couple of times this episode, yeah, Knicks and six. I said it last week, Knicks and six, taking game one and then taking the games at home. I think it's important that we just now win games at home and we're done. We're through to the next round.
Much improved form at MSG as well the last month or so. So
So I thought from the beginning this series was going seven games. Game one only reaffirmed that to me. Having Julius back, I think, makes me feel better about the Knicks' chances to win in seven. I think that we haven't seen the best that the Cavs have to offer. We're going to see a better Garland game. We're going to be in for at least one really good Mobley game, I think. But I think this is going to be the most exciting series in the first round.
Oh, absolutely.
Right up there probably with Kings Warriors. That's probably another one.
That's from the West. From the East, sorry.
From the East, West, by there's far, a couple of... this is the most exciting first-round series. You know, like, the first...
West has a couple of contenders there.
And yeah, for sure. Like, West is a lot more interesting than the East in the first round, that's for sure.
Looking like next Miami in the semifinals as well. So
what a break that would be, right? If the Knicks advance and they get to play Miami instead of Milwaukee. Oh my god.
Yeah. They're ten points up towards the end of the third.
That's crazy. Wow. Canada, just when you like, I thought like, oh yeah, Milwaukee in four. It was like my thing, like, because I had no faith in the Heat. They just look so washed, but they just stick around. Fucking Heat.
We've got a good experience roster.
It's something I forgot asked during the pod. Like, how are you going into the playoffs, and you buy out a guy like Kevin Love? How destructive would he have been for this series for us against us? He had three threes against the Bucks right now. So if he had done this last night against the Knicks, we would be
for destroyed. A young team, you would imagine they would love to have that kind of a veteran presence. Even if he doesn't get a lot of burn, just as like the guy who's been there, done that, you know, and Cavs legend, exactly. You know, and that's really get that.
Good rebounder as well. So,
always been a great
help rebounder from that side of things. So.
Especially right.
Just something I thought about because I was looking the game and watched the game. Why did these guys buy out Kevin Love?
It makes you wonder if there was something going on internally, honestly, you know. I don't know. Like, I feel like he had kind of fallen out of the rotation before he got bought out. And, you know, Kevin probably still feels like he can contribute to a championship team or a playoff team, which he is right now, like you guys mentioned, for Miami. So, that's kind of an interesting thing. But, yeah, it does kind of surprise you why Cleveland would have done that with such a young roster and inexperienced for the playoffs. Let's look ahead. Three games this week, game two, three, and four. So game two in Cleveland on Tuesday, game three in New York on Friday, and game four at MSG on Sunday afternoon. So what do you think we're looking at when we are here next week, guys? What's the series going to be?
I'm going to be super positive. I'm happy. I loved what happened last night. I love what I saw. Yeah, there's going to be a reaction from the Cavs, but I'd love us to go next Sunday be 3-1.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's 3-1. Finishing the week, going 2-1. Obviously, going 2-1 during the week. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a thing. We need to take these both of these games at home. We need to take care of it. We have to. We'd send a hot onslaught they're going to bring on Tuesday because they will want to get that game back. And especially that first game in New York, we're going to have to be on point because they will come out swinging again to regain home court advantage and swing the series. We need to be ready. We need to be already thinking for games at MSG to win them both.
Yeah, I think there is no way that the Cavs don't come out firing on all cylinders on Tuesday. They are, you know, they had home courts taken away from them. They are going to come out, you know, motivated and all that. And it's imperative to take care of home court, you know. And so I'm going to agree with you guys, hoping that we're 3-1, you know, this time next week. Take care of home court. You know, just get business out of the garden. But hey, you know, if you could somehow steal game two, that'd be awesome too. But I think I still think this is going to be a long series. So I fully expect to get a huge punch from Cleveland on Tuesday night and, you know, see what they throw at us. But yeah, I think 3-1 by the time we record next week, which would be great because that would put us in the driver's seat to advance in this series. All right, so that is going to wrap us up this week for a playoff edition of Worldwide Knicks. As always, thank you for joining the podcast. If you like the podcast, follow us on Twitter at WW Knicks Podcast. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube and turn on notifications, and also subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts if you are more of an audio listener. Until next time, we'll be Worldwide Knicks, Omar, Rafa, Alex, and we'll see you next week, hopefully with a bunch of Knick wins. And see you guys later.